There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba the Bloom, episode 71, recapping our way too crazy degenerate we are early 2024 DC draft that we did on Tuesday night, us and 13 other crazies for the first seven rounds of 2024. We'll talk about all that and some things that maybe happened that didn't happen that we were surprised about in the draft. We'll recap some of the recent news because some of the news is pretty crappy, is the way I'll put it nicely. We'll play our weekly game, which all of a sudden it's gotten interesting, folks, and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How we doing, my friend?
We're hanging in. I think last week or 2 weeks ago, Bubba said, "What, you're hurt, not injured," and that's where I'm at. The voice is a little down tonight, so apologies in advance. But other than that, doing pretty good, man. Tuesday was a blast to do this 2024 too early DC. It got me out of I was at a neighborhood function. I said I can only be here till 7. Did the Irish goodbye at about 6:55 and took a couple beers downstairs and drafted with 13 other, like you said, degenerates. So it's gonna be a fun show tonight to kind of just walk through that. I know the Rates and Barrels guys, DVR and Eno Saris, had an episode this week talking through the draft. Rob DiPietro, of course, who organized it, had his podcast, a couple RotoWire articles about it. So it's kind of cool to just those RotoWire articles from Ryan Roof and James Anderson we'll probably talk about throughout the show. But just, I don't know, kind of cool to look ahead for a little bit, a little sneak peek for next season, even though we've got 5 weeks left.
Yeah, it's fun. And you know, year one or really crazy. Year two, like you said, people have embraced it almost. Like there wasn't content like this, especially from people not involved in the draft. That was cool to see. There were a lot of people interested. Like Ben Tidd dropped in. We love Ben. He's like, so he dropped in just because he wanted to see what was going on. He was just curious, and he was throwing little nuggets out there, which we'll talk about. You tweeted about one that kind of stood out. People are way more interested now, which is great. Which I guess. Is good for the world of fantasy baseball, which we always think is like shrinking and becoming, not nearly as cool anymore, I guess, if I got the right word. But like we saw this last year with Gladiators and everything, people have been drafting from like October on, where in the past it was maybe some in December and whatnot. People are starting to embrace playing fantasy baseball year round. So I'm trying to get at like Underdogs taking over the world and best balls. And it's like, they just came out with their pennant underdog tournament on Thursday, which is for postseason play. So for people like me and you, I think that we obviously have fantasy baseball as our preference of things. It's cool to see that there's something kind of keeping the wheels rolling, that we're not just, you know, throwing stuff into the wind and doing it just because we like it, but people are actually embracing it, is what I'm trying to say. So
yeah, I thought this got a lot of pub last year, and then this year it seems like it got even more. So that's great to see. And yeah, this league too, like it's almost like feels like a keeper league, because basically Everyone came back from last year. There's one who did not, which, you know, the slacker who will remain nameless, did not participate, but 14 out of 15 came back. And so it's just kind of cool, just the like camaraderie angle of like, obviously there's no there's no like draft software set up for next year. So it was literally just 15 of us on a Zoom call, like throwing names out there and just talk. Like it was just, I don't know. You felt like you were in the draft room, and in our virtual world nowadays, that's a nice break from the norm.
Yeah, most definitely. So that was a lot of fun. We will recap that after we talk about some news and some matchups, but that was a blast. I'll just leave it at that, because we could just talk about that for the whole show. So we'll get to some recent news and notes real quick. And a bomb was dropped on Wednesday night in LA. The smaller one of the two, Mike Trout going back to the IL with a hand injury. I'll start with that one. I'll baby step us into this. He goes back to the IL. He played one game. They had a doubleheader on Wednesday. In the first game, he was out, and they said, oh, he kind of felt sore after the first game. He might play game two. Well, it didn't play in game two. Back to the IL. We can hit on that in a minute if you'd like. Secondly, Shohei Ohtani. This was a multi-million dollar injury is what we're talking about here. Torn UCL. He's already had Tommy John surgery once. He's going to have a second opinion, because nowadays some of these guys like to not have TJ and rehab it back. Sometimes it's successful, sometimes not so much. But he's going to DH the rest of the year. He came out and said on Thursday he will continue to DH because he hit a home run before he, quote-unquote, tore his UCL in the first game. In the second game, he still had an extra base hit, still smoked one. So he's proving he can hit with it. I don't know. Maybe the second opinion will say don't. We'll see, but that's a lot of what ifs. It just sucks is the basis thing. So what do you got on this one, Bloom?
It just sucks. Like, I think I not foreshadowed this, but just like was like, man, it would really suck if this happened to Ohtani when he's just, you know, weeks away. I mean, he was literally like, I don't know, 6 or 7 starts away from getting through this season and getting so much money, which I don't know how much of that he cares about. But it's just like, I wanted to see what this mega, mega, mega contract would look like and all that. And I don't want to say that's now thrown out the window. It's still going to be a mega contract. We'll just see kind of what it looks like and how teams are creative around, depending on the diagnosis and second opinions and follow-ups and all that, what they decide to let Ohtani do as part of that contract. So I don't know. It's absolutely brutal. The fantasy fallout. I mean, it's actually interesting. I'm in. So in Tout Wars, I don't know how many leagues have this, but in Tout Wars, you can, if someone's out for the year, or if someone's on the IL, you can get a rebate, so you can get FAB money back. Of course, there's always issues with Ohtani being two people. In Tout Wars, he's the pitcher and the hitter. I have Ohtani the pitcher, and technically I can't rebate him because technically he's not on the IL because he's hitting.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, so I don't know. Ooh. They may make an exception, but in the rules it does say like the player has to be on the IL, which makes sense. I mean, you can't just like rebate somebody if they're not playing well. Like they need to be hurt and that sort of thing. And so like, I don't know, just kind of a weird like thing that came up today when I was thinking about it and actually asked about it. And so we'll see what happens with that, because I'd like to get a good chunk of FAB back for the pitcher.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. And I think because that's the one thing about their being on Roto is you can do a lot of customization that they do. And that's one where they can definitely go behind the scenes, I think, and make that one happen. So I'm hoping that the powers to be will come to that conclusion. Knowing some of the powers to be like we do, pretty sure they'd be willing to listen to that. That's what I would say.
See, I'd be interested to see what you all think about that. If those rules should be bent or not. But
yeah, that's interesting. So yeah, he's going to try to DH the rest of the year. Cool. I think it goes back to like forever we've been saying, we're watching one of the most amazing things we'll ever see. Like, enjoy this, because you don't know how long you'll get it for. Not sure we thought it would end like this,
yeah.
But it was just like, I saw some stat today. He's got like 170 something career homers in 3 seasons, and he struck out over 500 in those 3 seasons. Babe Ruth had no more than 3 strikeouts in a season. He hit more than 30 home runs.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Because people try to compare him to Babe Ruth as the pitcher hitter guy. It's just like what Ohtani did was next level insanity.
No, it's not even close. And your comment on appreciate it while we have it is spot on, because like I'm just looking now, Ohtani is 29.
Yeah,
if he decides to get Tommy John, he's, you know, he could hit like you were saying. I mean, we saw Bryce Harper this year.
But if he has surgery, he's not going to be able to hit for a bit. That's the problem.
Yes, that's true. And if he has surgery, he won't be able to pitch until he's probably, what, 31? Mm-hmm. And then what, I mean, can your body, he's in his 20s now, but like, can he hold that up? Can he do the two-way thing when he's 31, 32? Like,
I hope what they decide to do is what I've been saying for probably since his first year where he kind of had the injury hiccups. I said, okay, that's what you got to do. This was before they played him every day. This is when Joe Maddon was like, okay, day before a start, he's not playing, day after, like all that stuff. No, he DHs every day, and he's their closer. That's what I want to see. Give me 40 bombs and 40 saves. Yeah. Let's go.
Like that's, he wouldn't really have to change anything with his, like, no. He wouldn't have to, yeah.
I guess the hardest part is he'd have to find a way to go warm up in the bullpen. Hope he doesn't have to hit. That'd be like Little League when you're warming up on the sides, and all of a sudden it's like your time to come up and hit. Oh, got to go. Like, there you go. Problem solved. Go warm up in the batting cages below the field.
I think he did that in one of the All-Star games. He warmed up probably in the middle of the thing.
But see, that's the angle I think they could maybe try to do. It'll still be taxing on his arm, but it's not taxing like starting every fifth day. So yeah. I'd like to see that. That would be fun because we already saw this one unicorn. Now let's see this other one that goes and puts up like 100-plus saves in his career and keeps hitting bombs. Like, what if he goes 40-40-40? How cool would that be?
40 homer saves and 40 steals.
40 steals and 40 saves, dude. Just think about it now.
He would then be an early first round. Otani went, I do wonder, Otani went second overall.
Yeah,
Weimer. Steve Weimer in our draft. I wonder if, I don't know if Steve said in our chat or not. Oh, he would still do that.
He's not thrilled by it.
Oh, of course. But, I don't know. I don't know if it would change my, it probably would in a DC to be able to have that flexibility.
Without having that flexibility and so much uncertainty at that time.
Not like knowing, I said, if he's going to get surgery or not.
That's because if he has surgery, he at least till midseason, like Harper.
Yeah.
Type thing. Yep. And so we saw where it dropped Harper, and that was fair because even when Harper came back, it's taken him a little while to get back to Harperness. So I think that's fair. It'd be tough to take him that early if he does go under the knife. So yeah. A lot of questions.
Otani and Trout both taken in the in our draft. The only league in the world where we have people on the IL for next season
right
already.
Right
and who drafted Trout? This guy. As I point to myself on the thing that was turning out.
That was a fifth round value, right? We'll talk about that. Don't you worry.
Technically sixth. I was on the wheel. I chose to take Trout in the sixth, so it looks
smart move. Smart move. Good talking point that way. Yeah. So those guys will pay more attention to what happens. I don't know if we'll see Trout the rest of the season. Let's put it that way. They have no reason to bring him back except to maybe put butts in seats. But that's about it. O'Neill Cruz is a big one because he's been on stash season for a few weeks. He got shut down from his running program as he has another soreness in his left foot. So there's no timetable to start again type situation. So for me, that's like a no-go dog. I think I saw one, it was either the manager or the GM said, we're hopeful he'll come back at some point in September now. It's not even like a guaranteed anymore. So if you were saving him, I think you should probably go.
Agreed. I have him in TGFBI, and I will be – he was my stash, and he will no longer be a stash after this week. So that's a pretty clear drop. I mean, like, Aliko Williams is playing and will probably be the shortstop for the Pirates the rest of the way. Like, that's rough. He's hitting .219 in 72 plate appearances without a homer or a steal. And a strikeout rate that is higher than his hard hit rate, which is really, really hard to do in a bad way. So I'm not really there. But like one name that like on the Pirates, if you're just looking for pickups, Liove Peguero, he's been playing more second base than shortstop. But with O'Neill Cruz just not coming back at all, like that playing time safety is there. And I think Peguero is actually a very legitimate fab pickup anyway, but even more so now.
Yeah, I like that call. I mentioned him a few times like 2 weeks ago on the first pitch pod. He had some big games. So shameless plug for that show. I try to highlight guys that aren't very well rostered on that hitting segment. So Josh Rojas, for instance, go check out his stats. You'd be surprised. Playing well. Yeah, I like the Peguero call. Let's talk about Nick Lodolo. Talk about another guy you can just give up on right about now. He has another setback as he has another stress reaction in his left tibia, aka the same thing he had earlier. They have him back basically in a boot, and they're trying to figure out what to do next with him. He gone for the rest of the season.
Yep, he's gone. You can ditch him for this year. I am curious where like Lodolo will fall in next year's drafts, because
we'll find out soon.
Maybe not. If we continue the draft, I guess in October, we're talking about doing the rounds 8 through 14. I don't think Lodolo would even go in that round 8 through 14 thing. I don't know. I mean, I look at the actual underlying skills for Lodolo, and assuming the health checks out, 28% strikeout rate on the season, 6% walk rate, both excellent. Plenty of whiffs, a 3.64 expected ERA underneath a 6.29 surface ERA. Like, I will be, again, assuming the health looks okay. I could see myself buying back in on Lodolo at what should be, I think, discounted cost next year.
Should be. Or you could take him with your first pick in round 8. We'll talk about that later. Last bit of news that I have for us here is just more just like a damn. Stone Garrett, who was really starting to find his groove, hitting the ball very well, playing every day, not just a platoon guy. He went to go try to catch a ball in right field, went into the wall, went down, had to get carted off. He's gone for a while. He has a fractured fibula, which is, yeah, not good. So he's going to be done for the rest of the season. That's about it. There's not a whole lot, I don't think, unless you know a random backup in Washington that gets your appeal. But there ain't much.
I mean, actually, this guy keeps coming up. Jake Alou has been playing left field. I originally thought would be the third base fill-in for Imer Candelario, but no. That it sucks. Garrett was like a pretty popular. He was hot.
He was a big pickup this last week, too. Yep, big pickup this week. I recall on my Tuesday show, he might have been the most added player in OCs this past week. So
that would make sense.
That was a big bummer on that one. All right, let's play our weekly game before we recap the first 7 rounds of our too early DC. And I'm just going to give Ryan the floor because he's going to have some fun stuff to talk about right now.
Domination, man.
Yeah. This was a butt kicking.
I was least confident. For anyone who listened last week, I was least confident in my picks of any week of the season this weekend. Yeah. And I dominated. Charlie Blackmon. This crushed. Was like 2012 Charlie Blackmon. This was Baseball Forecaster cover boy. I forget which year he was on the cover of the Forecaster. But yeah, Charlie Blackmon crushed 15 points, a season high for any hitter that any of us have taken. I don't think anyone has even gotten 10 points. And for those who listen, our little point system here for hitters is just walks and plus total bases. So Charlie Blackmon had 15 of those this past weekend to your Yoan Moncada 3. So not great.
Not good.
Jesse Schultens on the pitcher side for you dropped a 0, and Ken Waldachuk, who was my pick, had 11 points. He was actually pitching somewhat well of late in the right matchup. I think Waldachuk is a decent streamer. So we'll see, man. We've got, so again, on the line here is our round of golf at first pitch. And with that sweep this weekend, I have tied it up. We are 17-17 in match play throughout the season. So I'm back.
Yeah, you are back, and I knew this was coming. So it's going to be a fun one. I laugh, too, because Schulten's got oh, my goodness, Corbin Carroll's alive. He just hit a home run.
Hey.
Schulten's had a bunch of strikeouts tonight against Oakland, but didn't do much other than that. And Waldachuk got smacked around. So it was just like the typical different day streamer guy. It's a streamer. This is why these are streamers. Like, they are not predictable in the most, like, you can put them in the right spot, but it's like you can't lead a horse to water thing. You gotta hope they drink. And it's tough.
You took Cole Reagans 2 weeks ago. Ooh. And yeah, lost and had his worst, you know, how great Reagans has been. Like, yeah.
It was his worst because of the strikeouts. Because I've written about him a lot lately and talked about him a lot. He has not allowed more than 3 runs since he's been in the rotation since July 15th. That was just the one start where he had like 3 Ks. He had like no strikeouts. Every other start, he's just lighting the world on fire. And he just happens to go into Chicago on an afternoon game in Wrigley. And he probably had a little too much fun in Wrigley the night before. Can't blame the guy. But let's talk about our picks since you swept me. I'll let you start with your offensive pick of the week because pitching is atrocious this week. So let's talk the positive side of hitters.
Yeah, pitching was pretty rough this week. I went on the hitter side. I went with, so we're only taking 50% rostered or less guys and 12 teamers. And I went with Hot hitting Carlos Santana, who I think has 9 home runs over the last month. Santana gets 3 righties this week against the Padres. It's Yu Darvish, it's Pedro Avila, and Michael Wacha. So decent matchups. I'm just hoping for a bomb or two. And a few walks, so like in OBP points formats, I think, which this is, I think, Santana, who is an everyday player, is a decent pick.
Yeah, no, it's not bad. He's been, especially in our idea of OBP and potential power upside, not a bad pick at all. I am going with Elvis Andrus, and people might think I'm crazy. Yeah, maybe it's fair, but since August 4th, he's hitting .353, 7 doubles, 2 homers. On Thursday, he had another home run, stepping 3 homers since August 4th. And I love his matchups. When you look at who the White Sox are playing this weekend, it's Zach Neale. If you can tell me more about Zach Neale, you're more than welcome to. J.P. Sears and Paul Blackburn. Blackburn's not bad. I'll give Blackburn a little credit there, but pretty nice matchups for Elvis Andrus at home against Oakland. I'll take my chances that he doesn't walk a lot. That's the bugaboo. But I'm hoping for a couple extra base hits and see where it goes. But I'll take Elvis Andrus this week.
Did not realize he was that hot lately. The things you don't pick up on in the dog days. And yes, I have never heard of Zach Neale.
Yeah, if you can tell me more. Like, the only Neals I know, they play in 80s rock bands. So I'm lost on that one. That's Vince, for those that are too young to know that. Who do you got on the
pitching
side?
Including
me. Yeah. That's what I'm like our Jeff Erickson of the show. It's okay. I got you. Who do you have on the pitching side of things? Because like we said, we prefaced, this was bad.
Oh, yeah. It was bad again. Most weeks are bad. Common theme for the season. I feel like every maybe 1 week a month, There's a couple matchups that stick out, but I went David Peterson just for the strikeout upside. I know Peterson kind of got shelled in his last start, but that was the death start of at Atlanta. So like, who's not going to get shelled in that matchup? Peterson gets the Mets. Like, I really like the matchup. I like the matchup a lot. Strikeouts should be there. It's just all about control with David Peterson and how far he can pitch into game. So I'm hedging that, like, maybe he gets 5 or 6 Ks and can go 5 innings. That's like a best case. And again, that's a bad best case.
Yeah. I really wanted Paul Blackburn, but he's 54% rostered. So that doesn't count. So I am going with Cole Irvin of the Baltimore Orioles. He's facing the Road Rockies at home. And I was actually surprised to see Irvin is rejoin the rotation. He's made 2 starts now at Seattle, at Oakland. So take your comments where you want. But he's gone 5 innings in each start, 1 total run allowed on a solo homer, and he struck out 3 and 6. So crossing my fingers, because the Rockies are that bad, especially on the road. So I'm hoping that I get another 5 innings. I don't count on 1 run, maybe 2 or 3, but maybe he runs into 5 or 6 Ks. Like, you kind of, you're hoping Peterson gets the strikeouts. The Rockies do strike out a good amount. So I'm just hoping Irvin doesn't get destroyed. Because when you guys look at the other options on this slate, I was literally looking at, like, maybe Ryan Yarbrough will come in for 3 innings. Stuff like that. I was debating. And by the way, if you guys want to look into Yarbrough for the upcoming weeks, he's not a bad choice. He's got 2 wins and a save in his 4 outings since joining the Dodgers. But, yeah, Cole Irvin's my dude. It doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy by any means.
So, which means he'll probably score a bunch of points. But
yeah, this is how you felt last week. I'll come back on next Thursday and be like, oh, look at this. I won 2 to -2.
that's the most likely outcome.
That's how this feels. But all right, the moment we've been waiting for, and hopefully you have too. Let's talk 2024 too early. Draft. We'll bring up the draft board that's already up and loaded because Bloom's on top of things like usual, and let's have some fun with this. 15 teams, as Bloomfield mentioned earlier. DC format, will draft 50 total rounds eventually. Usually we do this first 7, and then we wait till they open up the actual draft rooms on NFBC, which they've been doing earlier and earlier. Like, they opened them up almost in the end of October last year, so we're really legit on one. But like he said, they're already whispering about our draft. Was whispering about doing 7 more rounds online like we did the first 7 before we do the rest. Turns into a slow draft. We'll finish it. What were your initial thoughts? Bloomfield drafted 15th. I drafted first. So before we get into like some of the picks and some of the other analysis and whatnot, what were your thoughts? Because you did tweet out your top like 16 players before the draft.
I did, because I had the last pick, and we'll get to that in a sec. Yeah, and actually, and first off, shout out so for the YouTube viewers, shout out to Ryan Roof, who I don't know how he did this, and I'm pretty good in Google Sheets, but basically recreated the NFBC style draft board in Google Sheets. And so he was throwing stickers up on the Google Sheet that we were all looking at in Zoom as we were going. Like, it was a professional operation. So shout out to Ryan Roof for that. Yeah, so like coming into the draft was Katie. So like, let's talk a little bit about KDS, because like I was thinking, I don't know, like the shape of the first round and what that would look like going into it. I thought there'd be a clear, and again, this was pre Otani injury, a clear, like Ronald Acuña is number one, no doubt. Otani was, I thought, the clear number two. And when I was going through, yeah, that like my ranking of the top 16, I could have mismatched 3 through probably 11, mm-hmm, from like Spencer Strider down through like Corbin Carroll. I don't see much between, and this is the order that these guys went in the first round: Strider, Julio, Betts, Tatis, Bobby Witt, Freddie Freeman, Jose Ramirez, Kyle Tucker, then Corbin Carroll. Like, I could make a case, I think, really for any of those guys to be a top three pick. So like KDS wise, I just kind of said, screw it, I'm going to take the last pick, because the rules of this league is we don't pick this back up until October again. And so what I want to do is just like pick whoever fell through the cracks and have the first shot at the Adolis Garcia, if you will, who was not drafted by anybody last year. And so it was obvious that he would be one of the first guys taken in the eighth round. So that was my pick. The KDS order was reverse standings for this year. And so you, my friend, had the first KDS. Was there like any thought in your mind?
No, I wanted Acuña and Acuña only. If I didn't have the first choice, I had decisions to be made at that point. And it kind of goes into what you're saying, like that middle pack of not a lot of separations makes you wonder, do you want like middle, like 6 or 7, or do you want more towards the back, like 10 or 11, so you get an early second round pick? And that's another reason why this is kind of fun, to see where the kind of dust is settling on all this. And because it is very fluid in the middle picks of the first round.
Yeah, I did my order backwards. So I did my KDS before doing my rankings of the first round, which smart Bloomfield. But if I had to do it again, I would KDS probably like 10 and just lock in one of those first rounders. It's a little different in not having any idea of what ADP is, because typically when I KDS, I want to see like what would the third and fourth round options be and work back from there. But like, that's impossible to do in this kind of draft where there is no ADP. We have no idea really who's going to get taken when. So just looking at the first round, I think that's kind of the sweet spot, is that like middle to late first round, if you can't get Acuña. And now Otani is obviously not a slam dunk at number two either. So
yeah, that changes quite a bit. And then J-Rod had his hot month, so he's back up to the top four, where if we did this draft maybe 2 weeks ago, that wasn't as obvious of a conversation starter. Betts all the way up to 5, where last year he was a back end first round pick and people were still kind of questioning that. Like, I that was my fade in the first round. I think yours too. I can't remember. Maybe it's just me. Might have just been me.
No, mine was Bobby Witt. So
that's
there,
right. That's going that well one. Too. Yeah. So we both nailed that one, but it is the first round, so like give a little slack on that one. Yep. But like Betts, Tatis, Witt went 7th, which is pretty strong. I like that. Freeman and then J-Ram, and I know the Rates and Barrels guys talked about it, and I'm not gonna try to steal all their storylines, but it's an interesting topic, because J-Ram is a guy that we used to think, okay, you're locked in for 30-30 with maybe a 40-40 upside if he really gets cranking, great batting average, and it's just been a massively down year, and he's gonna get the 20 homers and everything, but it's not the monster year you drafted him for in the first round. Yet the guys are back in on him in the first round, because I think there's kind of believing the overall pedigree. Would you be a guy to still take J-Ram around that point?
Yep, I would. He would probably be, so when I listed off all those first round names, probably be the one that I wouldn't even probably consider it like 3, but I think J-Ram in the middle of the first round is just fine. I mean, he's gonna go over 2020 and hit 280 this season, like not his best year, but I think that is why. I mean, J-Ram has earned the, I mean, he's been a $35 player each of the last three seasons. So like sometimes you don't have, you know, a great, great year every single year. Yeah. And even J-Ram himself had some really bad years or really bad half years earlier in his career, and he's bounced right back. So I just think the safety of it, it's interesting. We'll talk about it in a little bit, but third base, I think was a big thing in J-Ram's favor last year because it seemed very scarce. I don't know if that's the case this year, looking at Roof's purple positions throughout the draft board, but I'd be fine with J-Ram in that middle piece. I definitely thought, because I was drafting 15th, that there was a pretty clear drop off after like picks 11, 12. So Garrett Cole went 12, who, you know, depending on how much you like Cole or depending on your team build, if you want to go pitcher first round, I get it. But like, I thought there was a definite drop off after that Kyle Tucker, Corbin Carroll, Garrett Cole trio. So that this would have been the group that I was kind of considering at 15. After that, it was Yordan Alvarez, Ozzie Albies, Aaron Judge, Trey Turner, Bo Bichette, Ellie De La Cruz, which is going to be a talking point all season long, and then Corey Seager. Those were kind of the guys that went to those four teams around the wheel. I think that's a pretty clear tier below that top 10 or 11, 12 guys.
Yeah, a couple more. Like Corbin Carroll went 11th. I'm curious to see if he finishes strong. Like people maybe aren't as concerned with the shoulder. I think he can move way up. He can move way up in that deal.
Yeah, so, for sure. I mean, he struggled so much since the shoulder. And he just homered tonight. So he could be a top five guy with a strong finish.
I liked Jake Lusker's stones on this one because I've always been true on Ozzie Albies. I think I took him like in round four last year and I got critiqued for that. He took him in round one at pick 14. I didn't see that coming. I don't hate it by any means. I think Ozzie Albies is that good. I was just surprised to see Ozzie Albies go right there. I'm not going to speak for you, but getting Judge and Turner on the turn, I think could be ridiculous because we've already seen Judge getting healthy, three home runs the other night. Trey Turner's turned it on in a big way over like the last month as he's starting to get comfortable in Philadelphia. These two guys were like beginning first round players last year, both of them. And if Bloom can get them to return to even close to that form at the 15, 16 picks, the 1-2 turn, that's pretty ridiculous.
So it was interesting when I posted that aforementioned my top 15, top 16, this was Tuesday leading up to the draft. I did not have Trey Turner on that list. I had Corey Seager ahead of him, and I had Ellie De La Cruz ahead of Trey Turner. It's just interesting. Like, and again, I'm ranking these totally blind. Like I'm not doing projection. Like I want to generate some discussion and put a list together that I thought was okay and go from there. But it was interesting that when I actually was in the room, I decided to go against my quote unquote rankings and take Trey Turner over Seager and De La Cruz. A little bit of that was I knew I was going to take Aaron Judge. I said, if Aaron Judge fell to 15, give me that. And so that kind of took Corey Seager out for me because I didn't want to be too far back in stolen bases with two hitters in the first two rounds. And so it kind of came down to Ellie De La Cruz and versus Trey Turner, which I think is a fascinating debate. It's just my style. I mean, I don't know. Give me the track record and the kind of anti-recency bias of Trey Turner. Could turn out to be proven terribly wrong by passing on Ellie De La Cruz, but decided to do that. It was interesting when I posted that the top 16 rankings, the biggest pushback that I got was Ellie De La Cruz and Corey Seager, mostly saying they should not be in the top in the first round. There's a definite case to be made for those guys.
But. Oh, yeah, definitely a case to be made. I think one of the fun talking points this offseason is Ellie De La Cruz versus O'Neill Cruz, in my mind, just because they were drafted round two and round six, basically. And there was a point where O'Neill Cruz had a lot of the hype. Ellie's probably got more hype. I'm not going to say he doesn't. But there's a lot of similarities in the two, is what I'm trying to get at. And I'm very curious to see if that gap shrinks come next draft season. That's just one thing that stood out to me. I was curious when O'Neill would get taken, and he got taken back into round six. So that was quite interesting. Closers, Roof wrote an article on it. Ben Tidd mentioned a little something on this as well, but closers, like, it's interesting because DCs, we always talk about, you got to get your guys because you can't go fabbing guys and all this stuff. And then this last year, you know, closers have been pretty much locked in. We've talked about it. Everyone's talked about it. So it's kind of been one of those, like, if you waited on closers, you're probably still doing okay in the grand scheme of things. But in this draft, like, I was waiting, but not waiting on purpose the way things were going. I'd be like, oh, I don't like these guys. I'll wait till next round. And more guys kept going. A ridiculous amount of closers went off the board in this draft. And I don't know. I feel pretty hamstrung at the moment. You took Devin Williams in round 3, which helps you out quite a bit. But like, I got Albert Alzolay as my first closer at the sixth round. What was your thoughts on this closer situation? Because DCs, they get pushed up, like I was saying, but it still felt like it was, people just ignored how good this year was for closers.
Yeah, this was like turbocharged closer inflation. And maybe that's just one draft, but I think a lot of it is, and to actually put some numbers behind that, Ben Tidd mentioned this in the Zoom, but in the top 50 picks, there were 8 starting pitchers taken and 8 closers. Like, that's wild. I think a lot of it is, I think folks are hesitant to go, and James Anderson wrote about this in his RotoWire article. I don't think he took a starting pitcher. He took one. Took Freddy Peralta in the 4th round, which great pick.
We support that about last Bubba week. Bubba the Bloom supports that.
There's hesitation, and I felt this. There's hesitation to draft starting pitching in this. I think just because at the drop of a dime, any of these guys can get hurt. We've still got 6 weeks to go in this season. It just feels like the safer play is to load up on bats and closers, which I don't know if the injury rate in closers and starters, what that looks like, what the data is on that. But I think that's why starting pitching fell so much in this draft. And so I would, if you're trying to have a takeaway from this and starting pitching pool next year, I wouldn't take too much away from this draft. I think once we get into draft season next spring, or for some of us, in a couple of months, I think starting pitching will come back right up after that. So we could talk about starters in a little bit, but yeah, to get back to your question on closers, I felt like I kind of got lucky that Devin Williams was there at the end of the 3rd. I thought that was a no doubt just at the wheel. I had no idea who would come back to me. The order of start of closers made a ton of sense. Ryan Roof took Felix Bautista and he's team 11, so yeah, that's probably like pick 20, something like that.
Yep.
21. So he was the first one. Emmanuel Classe went after that, and then it was the 3rd round closer run, Josh Hader. Right.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Marcell Iglesias, Camilo Duvall, Devin Williams, and then the Diaz brothers. It was a kind of funny moment in the Zoom. I think John Fish, who took Alexis Diaz, just said Diaz.
Yeah, or like, which one?
And we were like, yeah, which one? And the next pick, Mike Mager took Edwin Diaz, who I'll admit, I totally forgot about.
Yeah, that's why I wanted.
It would have been the 7th round, and I would not have taken Edwin Diaz because he was just didn't show up anywhere.
Yeah, I wanted to throw this in there real quick. Greg Jewett mentioned, how did Edwin Diaz drift this far in a DC? And it's exactly what Bloomfield just said, because I was with you. Like, I was going through like player raters and project, like, you know, rest of season numbers and all these things. And obviously, a guy that hasn't played all season ain't going to show up unless you scan a long way down some lists.
Yep.
So yeah, that was just not having it all, basically.
Where would you move Diaz up, knowing what we know now? Would you move him ahead of like Like, I still think I'd take Devin Williams over Diaz, but
I know I'd have Bautista for sure. Clase's fair.
Williams, Iglesias or Duvall?
It's kind of in that Williams, Duvall, Iglesias range. I could listen to almost any argument there and be okay with it.
I mean, there is some risk to Edwin Diaz not being Edwin Diaz again when he comes back. I mean,
well, he's trying to get back this year. So it's nothing arm related, so I'm pretty pumped on, like, I could listen to someone say have him near Felix Bautista, and I don't know if I love it, but I get it. Let's put it that way. Like, he was the 1-1 when it came to closers. There was, like, Clase was the 1B to his 1A, and he tore his ACL. So why are we discounting him that much?
Yep.
My only thought there. So yeah, when the Edwin Diaz pick got dropped, I was just like, damn it. That's a good one. That's a good one. Totally. There's always going to be a few of those in these drafts when we have no ADP, nothing to really go off of. You're just like, yep, that's the one. That's one of them right there for sure.
How did you feel about your Alzolay pick? So in the sixth round, so obviously your team won. You're the last pick of the sixth round. You got caught, man. You got caught in a closer run. It was the picks right before you were Ryan Pressly, Joe Ryan, then David Bednar, then Bellinger, then Kenley Jansen. So three closers went in five picks ahead of you. And it felt like there was a big drop off after that. And you went with Alzolay.
That's what it was. Like, I had the sheet of paper still next to me where I was like writing down names as the draft was going on to like keep like reminding me of. I had a whole list of closers and literally it's just crossed off. And the last three were like, were Pressly, Bednar, and Jansen. I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me right now. So I was going through it, and Alzolay's, he's under contract through like 2027 or so. And he's been so dominant. Like, I have him in a ton of DCs this year as a spec guy. Obviously, he's not a spec guy to me. I don't know why they wouldn't make him the closer next year unless the Cubs just go and sign a guy, which always possible. So as long as he's got the job, I love it. He's almost got 20 saves right now, and he didn't get the job till like mid-season almost. So I'm a big fan of what Alzolay can do in the back end of that bullpen. Was it my number one choice? No. He'd be a great closer too if I had another guy. But at that point, like, we could – you know, we probably won't do it on this show, but if you start looking at the other options on the table, like, we're going with the Tigers closer, we're going with the Marlins closer, like, we're starting to get into the sketchy waters at that point.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to be getting involved in any of that.
So the closers that went after Alzolay was Paul Sewald in the seventh, who I'd probably take over Alzolay, but then Munoz went. I don't know.
That's always a weird revolving door in Seattle. Yeah. It's always something going on there.
So I don't to put a bow on the closer thing, I think for next year, this is just my guess. It feels like there's going to be a top 10 to 12 closers that are locked in with good skills and locked in with the job. And I think you're going to have to make a decision. Do you want to take one of those top 10 to 12 closers in the first six rounds? I think that's going to be the kind of, as you're game planning, your strategy for next season. Where are you willing to go in that group if you are at all?
Yeah, most definitely. And then, you know, you mentioned that the idea of maybe starting pitching doesn't go as soon because of the concerns with so much time to go makes a ton of sense. And it could also be the new environment, the hitting environment in baseball. There's a lot of different angles to look at. I think the hitting pool is so deep. And there's the elite pitchers. There's a few of them, not even that many anymore. And then we've talked about the blob in years past. I remember sitting in this draft room going, wow, they all feel so similar right now. Like, all felt so similar. And I'm thinking, but I'm not going to take another big bat instead of force a pitcher here. And then the pitcher I was thinking of goes like three picks later, but then like the next guy I was looking at went almost a round later because it was just all over the board when it came to pitching. And the draft board shows it, like, in round two, you got Cole, Strider, and Otani in round one. Round two, you had Gausman and Castillo when it comes to starters go. But then round three, it picked up a bit. You got Burns, Wheeler, Gallen, Kirby. They went in round three. And then round four, you had Glasnow, Woodruff, Freddie Peralta, Sandy Alcantara, and then some guy took Yuri Perez in the end of the fourth round. So between rounds three, four, and five, I think you really saw the pitching run come into play where people wanted to make sure they at least had one, maybe two potential aces on their squads.
Yeah. And I as you list through those names, it seems like this year more than ever, there's more like, I don't know, there's not as much of the track record or health injury.
No,
with these guys in the second, third round, which is where they'll eventually end up going, I think, just seems this year that I don't know, that top tier of starting pitching just doesn't seem to be there. Like you just mentioned Glasnow, who when we talked about him last week, like on a per inning basis, he's one of the best in baseball, but there's obviously some innings risk there. There's innings risk, of course, with Brandon Woodruff. There's innings risk, I would even say, with Yuri Perez, with Freddie Peralta. Like there's just, I'm not saying those are bad picks or anything. It's just like, I think you're going to have to kind of go stick your neck out a little bit on the volume side. And maybe that's fine, because you don't need as many innings nowadays to you know,
I guess a big part of it.
So yeah, it was just interesting. I coming into the draft, I had no idea. I didn't spend too much time on starting pitching rankings. I figured it'd be Strider and Cole, like easily 1-2, and probably Gausman 3. Like that made a ton of sense, and that's how it played out. After that, man, I had no idea how this was going to shake out.
Like Castillo went before Burns, then you had Wheeler. Gallon's now the sixth pitcher off the board, the starting pitcher. Like, who would have thought that coming? Like, it makes sense, but who would have thought that coming?
Luis Castillo as the number four starting pitcher just sounds wild, but it's probably right. Jason Dupont took him in the middle of the second round, and like, I mean, I get it. The Seattle version of Luis Castillo has been fantastic. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it's just that calibration. Every time we go into a new year, like there are going to be guys who are at their new high in terms of rankings, and we just kind of got to get used to it. So yeah, Luis Castillo, top five starting pitcher, folks. Get used to it.
George Kirby, top seven starting pitcher. That's got to make you happy, even though I think you were hoping he made it back to you. I don't know, but that was a surprise in a again, I say surprise because they all make sense in a roundabout way, just because it is so wide open. But to see him go, you know, ahead of, you know, maybe even the Glasnows, the Woodruffs of the world, he's moving up that ladder in a big way, where he relies so much on volume, kind of like Sandy Alcantara, where Kirby better be on or it gets dicey real quick.
Yep, volume and ratios and whip. And we talked about last week how Kirby has actually been, the strikeouts have been up a lot lately, and some pitch mix changes to drive that. So I actually tweeted out that Ryan Roof's pick of Kirby at 41 overall in the third round, like it is one of those we kind of have to calibrate to it, but I think he'll be a third, fourth rounder come draft season. And yep.
Think so.
You know, we don't talk about whip and walk suppression enough. I think Kirby's got the goods. He misses a lot of bats in the zone. I think he can get by with even if it's just a league average strikeout rate. If you go with that great walk rate, I think George Kirby will be anchoring some staffs next year.
I think you are correct. In last year's draft, catchers went wild, especially at the end of the draft. The first seven rounds, they were bonkers. I remember I left the draft without a catcher, and wasn't happy about it. Then I wrote this thing called the Black Book, and I was like, who needs to draft catchers?
And you became
this is great.
The catcher guy.
I'm good. Nothing to worry about over here. This draft was much different. I don't know if it's people are realizing the same thing, that, you know, outside of maybe one or two guys, there's a lot of really good mid-pack catchers these days. There's a lot of revolving doors at catchers, platoons at catchers. I would say even like the elite catchers aren't that elite compared to what they used to be. Like they're still there, but like JTR is great, but he hasn't like run away with the position like he has Will Smith, those guys. So this year it was a bit different. JTR went early round five, then Will at 5.2 to Steve Weimer. James Anderson took Will Smith at 5.4. Adley Rutschman went at 5.5. But then nothing until round six when Ryan Venancio took Francisco Alvarez in round six. That'd be like 6-7 or something like that, 6-9. And then Sean Murphy went to James Anderson at 7-4. So Anderson left with two catchers. He's mentioned how that way he doesn't have to waste, because, you know, a lot of us take DCs and take four catchers because you take some, you know, half-ass catchers late. You know you're going to need help later, but if you get two elite catchers, in theory, you should only need one backup barring injuries, is what it comes down to. So that was part of James Anderson's theory between that and this closer situation. But what's your thoughts on catchers this time around? Because like, I wasn't even writing catchers' names down because there are still so many available. I was like, yeah, I'm going to keep going elsewhere.
Yeah, only four teams took catchers. So yeah, like that, and that's a stark contrast to what we saw last year, like you said, Bubba. I wonder, and I mean, and you would know, you're the guy. I think it's almost like, oh, only five catchers went this year. It must not be a deep position. I might almost say the opposite and say there are a good number of like decent catchers that this group outside of your Realmuto, Will Smith and Adley Rutschman, they just don't separate themselves from 100%. A pretty big tier. And so like, why go? And again, I'm not bagging any of these picks. I'm just saying like, I don't think we'll see as many like sixth round catchers because it feels like that kind of big mid tier of catchers. You can just kind of grab a guy or two there, or I know this is not a fab league, but throughout the fab year, you make this point all the time. There are catchers that we can grab pretty much not at any point, but there are options at catcher. And so I think this trend of catchers going later than what we saw last year, I think that'll stick.
I think you're right. I think you will see at least one or two guys every draft try to nail it like James did. And it makes sense if you can nail it. I get it. But at the same token, it's always like the opportunity cost type conversation here. Taking a catcher at point A compared to what else was available at point A, that's way out of my pay grade at times. But what you said is I think a lot of these guys are very similar after you get to a certain point. It's kind of like the pitching we talked about. The catchers is the same deal where we'll see a run and then everyone will start going because like, okay, now we need to go and get our dudes because it will drop off. You don't want to be stuck with like Martin Maldonado's of the world. You don't want that. Even like Nick Fortes, who's great. You don't want to be stuck with the platoon dudes at that point. It's almost like closers. Okay, the elite closers went. Then you get a little bit of a breather. Now this mid-tier of all these guys are going. After Adbert Alzolay, you don't want any of those other closers. Well, you don't want any other catchers after a certain point. And that's kind of what we'll see, I think, when we redraft. I think we might see more of a round 10-ish situation where all of a sudden we start seeing catchers fly. And that's where you'll want to start getting your dudes, which makes sense. And it's also another part, too. We saw a lot of young catchers come up this year and make an impact. Yainer Diaz, who I love. Langelier is on a home run barrage right now. He's showing he can hit. There's a bunch of them that are starting to produce. And when we look at the end of the season with catchers, and I know people love to tune in for catcher talks, so I'll limit it from here. it's such a similar minefield where you almost want to find a guy that can hit for average because most of them are hitting for similar power, if that makes sense to anybody. So like Cal Raleigh, Curlin tweeted it out. He's basically Mike Zunino. He strikes out a ton. He's hitting close to 200. He's going to hit close to 30 home runs, though. Where I joked, and the reason I had tons of Jonah Heim this year is if you look at their profile, Jonah Heim was a poor man's Cal Raleigh. Then it turns out he can hit for average, so it was even better. But that's the kind of situation you're going to have a bunch of guys like that stand out each draft season at the catcher position. So we'll see how that goes. All right, next point of conversation here, third base. You kind of hinted at it earlier. We talked about how shallow it was last year, like the Gunnar Henderson wall, Bregman wall last year after like the top seven. It just dropped off tremendously. A lot of third basemen went on this time. I believe you said nine went in the first seven rounds. I took Josh Jung to start round seven. I was kind of happy with that one because I think if he was healthy, that was way earlier than that, and he should be back by opening day next year, that's for sure. So what's your thoughts on all these early third basemen going off the board? Because, you know, Bobby Witt won't have third base eligibility this year, so that disappears. That's another conversation point on a lot of these guys. Eligibility was another fun part of trying to figure this stuff out.
Eligibility and, hell, which team? Like,
yeah, free agents.
Like, who is an upcoming free agent? Like, I know some of the big names, but not – and that was another Ryan Roof special. Yeah. We actually had the stickers with F.A.
Yeah, Blake Snell, F.A. That's impressive. Aaron Nola, F.A.
But, yeah, position eligibility is one. When you're in the draft room kind of doing it, yeah, I didn't realize Bobby Witt had zero games played at third base. I just get so ingrained from draft season, like who's eligible where, and that's all going to change. Like Bryce Harper's going to be, I think he's got 15, 16 games at first base. So he should be first base eligible, but he obviously won't be outfield.
Here's a fun one real quick. Sorry, but I'm going to steal this from Dom and Rob are talking about it on their recap pod. One that I didn't even think about. And it's interesting. Christian Encarnacion Strand might be UTIL only.
UTIL only?
Because that'll be his most, like he won't have, right now he doesn't have 20 games at any position. But his most is UTIL. It's like 16 at UTIL. I want to say it was like 10 or 11 at first base and like 8 at third base. He might be UTIL only, even though he plays all over the place.
He'll probably get to first base.
Yeah, that was recorded. That's interesting. Yeah, that was recorded before Votto went on the IL. Yeah. But if Votto stays in, it's just like, whoo, like that changes the value of him in my mind. So,
well, and last year, if you recall, we didn't, the room in general did not realize Bryce Harper would be UT.
Yeah, because I think James Anderson took him. And yeah, we all found that out after the fact. I think Waxman unraveled that one. And eligibility, wild stuff. But what's your thoughts on third base? Because this is another fun one.
I always kind of think this is what we think. Projecting players is so hard every year. Saying a position is deep or shallow or whatever is just an aggregation of projecting those players. So like third base entering this season was said to be a shallow position. Maybe that was the case before this season, but like that can change on a dime. And I think we're seeing that with third base where, like you said, Bubba, 9 third basemen went. And I think, let's see, in the first 5 rounds, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 third basemen went as well. And that's not even accounting for guys that are probably different color stickers who I'm just glossing over, but seemed like there were definite options. It was Jose Ramirez, then Eli De La Cruz, then Austin Riley, Rafael Devers, Nolan Arenado, Gunnar Henderson, and then Manny Machado. Those were the third basemen that went in the first 4 rounds. One thing, as I say that kind of that is similar to last year in terms of categories, probably going to be the same. Like, you're gonna have J-Ram and De La Cruz if you want to get steals at third base, and there's probably not going to be too much else out there in terms of stolen bases. Like maybe Henderson if he decides to start running, but he hasn't really shown that yet. So
it's interesting to see how that one pans out. And like you mentioned, Machado in round 4, and then literally it went almost 3 full rounds before I took Josh Young. So third base,
he was a forgotten man, Josh Young, when you made that pick.
Yeah, I think I got a lot of oh.
Yeah, like, that's the O factor.
Feeling. It's a good feeling. Get the O factor.
Yeah, I didn't get many O factors, but
yeah, I keep glancing at my paper I was using that night, and a lot of names on there. I'm still curious to see when they get drafted. But third base, that'll be another fun one to take a peek at later on. A couple players that stood out, one that really stood out to us, and it wasn't that it was, again, I don't think any of these are bad picks because just we're kind of more surprised than anything, but CJ Abrams going in round 5 to Jason DuPont, and DuPont put together a really good team. So I love what he's doing, and I love CJ Abrams, like big Abrams fan. He's earned the right. He could be a 20, 30, 20, 40 dude when all things are said and done this season. I think it was more just like the shock fact, like, wow, CJ Abrams has moved into the 5th round of drafts. And it's not wrong. It's how I felt last year when Michael Harris was a 2nd round pick last year. I'm like, whoa, what are we doing? CJ Abrams is up to round 5. And in reality, if he finishes like 25, 40 or something, he might move into like round 3.
I could definitely see that. And you're right, with these surprise things, it is more of just like, wow, I'm not used to seeing that. CJ Abrams, I have in labor, and he may be taking me to the promised land in labor. I got him in like the 19th or 20th round, and it's just like you get a guy that has this type of production that we've seen from Abrams, but it's not just that. Like, this is a guy who was a top prospect who was obviously way over his head last season. Like, just got rushed to the majors, was 21 years old, trying to hit major league pitching without much high minors experience at all. And like, yeah, it wasn't going to go well. And so I think that's why we're going to see Abrams stick this early, or even earlier than when Jason DuPont took him in the 5th round, is because this was a top prospect who only struggled for like 1 year, but put it together and could put Eli De La Cruz type numbers up a round or two later.
Well, like, let's just be real about it. And I know it's maybe the 99th percentile outcome, but if Abrams does this kind of production again next season, what separates him from Ozzie Albies?
Yeah, I mean, probably like,
besides position, I guess.
He'll have less power, less runs in RBI just in the lineup. But I think Abrams is going to get a boatload more steals.
Yeah. Well, in years past, Albies didn't have that kind of RBI production. So, because he's like, so it's just one of those, like, I'm curious to see. I think they're both producing at amazing levels that, it's just something to sit back and think about. Like, I know you like to schedule out your drafts. I love our podcast. It helped me a ton this year about, you know, picks 100 to 150, so on and so forth. And you can start kind of piecing together, well, this guy versus this guy stuff. And that's one that just stands out to me, like the difference in ADPs there. Like, you had Matt McClain going in round four.
I was just going to say, another guy who you're surprised to see that early, just because we're not used to it, was definitely McClain.
Well, and Ha Sung Kim went two picks before him.
Yes.
That was another one. And again, both guys, amazing seasons. I kept looking at Kim going, yes, he's helping me everywhere. We know how great he is. Are we really doing this right now? Like, I just couldn't. I had him on my bay. I'm like, I can't do it. I can't do it. It's like he's finally doing it, and maybe this is the guy he is, and we thought he'd be. But, yeah, someone did it, and it might pay off. And plus, he's got three positions. Well, I don't know how many positions he'll have this year, but
I'll be second, third next year, maybe shortstop if he gets enough. But, yeah, I mean, I did not realize Ha Seong Kim has 17 homers, 28 steals, and is hitting 280. Awesome. Like, that's freaking nuts.
Yeah.
So that was a surprise in terms of, like, just seeing a name go that early. A couple other ones that stuck out to me. Let's get prepared for a second round. Luis Robert, Jenny Butler took Luis Robert in the late second round,
and he won't fall. He won't fall that far.
Yeah, I thought was what was pretty late for where Robert will eventually go. I can see Robert even going up to where I picked in the at the 1-2
100%
wheel, which was kind of where he was going last year before his injuries started creeping up. But then obviously Robert has shown that he can stay healthy for a season. So that was one. Who was another one where I thought I was just surprised? Jose Altuve. I was surprised to see Jose Altuve. Zach Waxman took Altuve, 25th overall. Yep. And I just kind of think of Altuve as like, I don't know, fifth, sixth round solid kind of veteran. But you look at what Altuve's done this season. So part of my ranking process was to combine the preseason projected like dollars per game and average that with what they've done this season. Altuve rated out as like sixth overall because of how good he's been this year. So that's one where, like, I was curious to see where Altuve would go, and I don't know, he hasn't been a second rounder for a few years, but
I think,
and then how
fall.
Do you like,
I think he I falls know. I think there's an ageist thing that'll take place with him.
I was gonna say, is how much do you trust this rise at Altuve's age?
And I'm not saying that he should fall, I just think he will fall, is what I'm saying.
That was definitely a name where I was like, okay.
One second round three.
Juan Soto round three.
Haven't seen that very often.
I've not seen that very often. That's a faller for sure compared to last year. I mean we talked Juan Soto to death. We did not like him as a top 10 pick entering this season. But third round,
it's interesting. If he could rebound, that's pretty good.
Yeah, James Anderson took him, who had one of the more interesting builds. We talked about his two catchers being that. He also took two closers. Yep. Again, this is all by design. And then he has Julio and Juan Soto with that. So that's a sexy team.
Adelis Garcia, forgotten last year, round three this year. So that's fun. Yep. That's a good one. One I mentioned off air with you, if we're talking fallers, Paul Goldschmidt to round six, to Rob DiPietro, back into round six. That's how the mighty have fallen type conversations when it comes to first base. Like, Bellinger went before him. Christian Walker went before him. Those are two guys that were not going before him, obviously, in years past. So that was an interesting one.
Yeah, and actually, I'll get to that one in a sec. Yelich and Bellinger, those were two guys that have been tied at the hip the last couple seasons. Yep, exactly. And both, like, just totally shit the bed 2 years ago. ADP was way down entering this season. And Yelich went in the fifth round to Mike Mager, and Bellinger went late sixth. So I was curious to see where those guys would go. Goldschmidt, I think, is a combination of, like, not so much like how the mighty have fallen. He's I think it was more just like the room kind of forgot about him. The O factor on that pick, I remember, was pretty high. Rob DiPietro took him in the sixth. And if I had to do it again, I would probably take Goldschmidt over Trout, who I took five or six picks before. So
yeah, I had Goldschmidt circled, hoping people would keep forgetting about him to the end of round six. But yeah, he shouldn't have. That's for sure.
Double digit steals at first base, and that was a really good pick by Rob, Paul Goldschmidt.
Another fun one: Kenyon took Walker Buehler in round seven. That could be interesting. I don't know how many innings he'll get next year. Coming off of TJ's, but man, even if you get like 100 Walker Buehler innings in round seven, that's pretty interesting stuff. I'll say that because he paired it with Corbin Burns and Joe Ryan, so it's his SP3. Makes it very intriguing. Yeah, he's one of the teams with no closer. So Buehler is a fun one for him. I'm interested on Venancia. Ryan Venancia knows prospects very well. He took Riley Green in round seven.
Yeah.
I like Riley Green. He's come back. He's hit pretty well since he's come off the IL. I think I was still surprised to see him in round seven. I guess if he lives up to the hype, though, it's easily a round seven pick. I was a little bit surprised when that one came off the board.
Yeah, and I think some of that is Ryan's style. He definitely, you're saying that the prospect side, he likes to take some of those younger, high-ceiling guys. He was one of the ones when Ellie De La Cruz went to John Fish, his podcast partner, Venancio, definitely wanted Ellie De La Cruz in the second round. I figure he probably didn't expect him to, but you're saying that. So, and then Ryan did go. He's the one who took Francisco Alvarez in the sixth round, and then Riley Green in the seventh. So a complete opposite style of what I do. Again, that's why I took Trey Turner over Ellie De La Cruz. Not to say what's right, what's wrong. I've been burned by that in the past, Bobby Witt Jr. this season. But yeah, Riley Green in the seventh round. I don't think he'll end up that high, but I mean Riley Green, I can absolutely see it. He's been great. Part of a Tigers lineup that recently, thanks to your boy, Torkelson.
That's right.
And my boy, Kerry Carpenter.
Yeah, it's a fun team.
They've been hitting.
They just called up Parker Meadows. They got Colt Keith knocking on the doorstep. Like, if you're a Tigers fan, I'm not saying they're going to ever like win the World Series, but at least you're going to have some fun baseball to watch pretty soon. Like, really fun baseball to watch in Detroit. I think we'll call it.
What about Christian Walker real quick?
Yeah,
he was a riser. A riser. I did not expect that. Late fifth round to John Fish.
That's just Walker. What he's done the last 2 years now. I think people are back in. He had that dud of a season the year I was all in on him. Just completely pooped everywhere. Hit 10 home runs and hit 244. But like last year, 36 and 242. This year, 28, 8 steals even, hitting 272. I think people are a believer, and he's a 30-plus homer guy. And if you know, a little bit of everything else, I think, is what the conversation point is for Fish. I won't speak for Fish. He's a very solid player, but that's kind of where my head was at. Yep. But before we take listener questions, I wanted to go over our squads real quick. So what are your thoughts after seven rounds? What do you have the first pick coming up. I'm not saying you tell me your pick, but what are you kind of thinking you need to focus on in the next few rounds? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I haven't really even thought about it. To recap my team, Aaron Judge, Trey Turner, the 1-2. Then I went Devin Williams, Cedric Mullins at the 3-4, Logan Webb, Mike Trout at the 5-6, and then Zach Eflin, Mr. Irrelevant for the first seven rounds. I'm not going to take an outfielder again. I've already got three outfielders.
Sure, you like those five outfielder builds.
Yeah, much to my detriment, but... So probably need to focus on a non-outfield bat. I think the good thing about getting Mullins, Trey Turner, and Aaron Judge, I feel like power speed's taken care of. Probably need to focus more on batting average. And that's probably a mistake on my part coming out of this draft, because batting average is a pretty sneaky, scarce category of not only just batting average, but getting guys of batting average that also do other things. So batting average will be a priority. And strikeouts as well. So, like I said, with Logan Webb and Zach Eflin, like, I look at those guys from a ratio standpoint, but I need to take someone who misses a ton of bats, but may have some, you know, control issues kind of a thing with ratio. So I need to get a high strikeout.
I got a guy for you. So.
Who we got?
Kodai Senga. I almost took him in round seven.
That would be a great fit.
That's perfect for your squad.
For Webb and Eflin.
So. Yeah. Like I said, he's on the top of my pitching list right next to me here. I literally almost took him before Josh Jung, but I'm like, yeah, Jung fell pretty far. Let's run with that one. So yeah, for me, Cunha to start off, because that was the easiest thing I've probably picked in a long time. I went Lindor round two, Orozarena round three on the 2-3 turn, locked up pretty much homers and stolen bases for a while, at least in this league. And Lindor and Acuna should supply decent average as well. Then we got into the pitching side of things. I went Yuri Perez in round four, Max Scherzer round five. If I can get 150-ish innings out of both of them, I love the strikeouts. Both of them bring pretty good ratios, especially Yuri Perez, sneaky good ratios this season. So I'll take my chances with those two. We talked about Alzolay in round six because closers are just gone, but he is a ratios and strikeout guy as well, which is pretty nice. And then I went Josh Jung in round seven, hoping for like a 250-ish average, but all the pop in the world in the very, very good Texas Rangers lineup. So kind of where I was going there. I was torn on the Jung, but like I said, I took Jung. I like Senga. I like Zach Geloff, who's still out there. That's a dude I think could be very fun for power speed guys that need that out there. There's a handful of first base has a few dudes available that are interesting. So yeah, I have to wait 14 picks before mine. So I might as well tell everybody what I want, cause it'll all be gone probably by then. But Senga was towards the top of my list. That's a guy that fits your team very, very well. All right. Let's take some listener questions first in the chat here. Roger Bloomfield. He was wondering where you guys are placing high prospect first year guys with mediocre performances like Melendez, Beatty, Varsho. That's a great conversation point we're going to have at some point. And I'm looking for the value on those guys. I like this year's Durans and, Josh Lowe's. Like, there's a bunch of these dudes that kind of disappointed a bit that, you know, Tristan Cassis, guys like that. Cassis is still out there. He's a guy that I was looking at also. So, I think we'll start seeing them show up pretty soon.
And that's something I need to look at too. I think so too. But this goes back to that CJ Abrams example that I just said. It's just like, can't discount a lot of these guys when they struggle early on,
especially so young.
Yep, exactly.
And Melendez will only be outfield eligible, just like Varsho, by the way. No catcher for no catcher for either one of them. So keep that on your radar. That's one thing that will drop Melendez, period. He's just, because now he's just like, he's a good hitter, but he's more like a basic outfielder at that point.
10 catcher game. So I guess it's a little league specific, like Yahoo maybe.
For our draft, Melendez outfield only. So that's another one of the ratios to put into play.
Glad I didn't take catcher MJ Melendez in the middle of the damn draft.
That would have been fun. Live on air. Dean Winchester asks, where do you pick Skeens? Paul Skeens, number one pick in this past draft. He's almost going to be in, he's probably going to get some AAA innings by the end of this year. And we saw how quick people were called up last year. Skeens will pitch at some point next season in the bigs. That's one of those ones that I think he's like a mid 20th round dude. Maybe someone goes earlier, but I think someone will take a chance on him.
I think he'll eventually go earlier. I think of like, I forget where Grayson Rodriguez was going this season. I feel like something around there. I mean, obviously Rodriguez has more minors experience, but like from what we've heard and seen so far from Skeens, I could see that. And like you said, Bubba, the rise of young starting pitchers that have been very good this year, like your Yuri Perez, I think will further, not inflate, but kind of bolster an early position for Skeens. That'll be fascinating to see where Skeens goes in this draft, because I don't think he's coming up this year.
No, but he will be up for sure next year, barring an injury. Yeah. He will get some run because, there's no doubt about it. That's going to be the one that I've already, behind the curtain, I've already started planning a couple Bench with Bubba episodes with prospect guys. Like, hey, who do we need to pay attention to that we did not care about? Because most of these guys came from AA last year. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. I'm especially if like 30th, 40th round DCs,
take
those shots.
Like, if you could have got a Gavin Williams guy or something, and like, oh man, that'd have been an electric factory. Yep. Michael Utz says Juan Soto at pick 34. Yeah, we were quite surprised on that one as well. Gaman always has great questions. Do you agree with McLean going one round earlier than Abrams? I do not. I like Abrams more than McLean.
I feel like they're about equal. So yeah, like a round early, but that's not really saying much. I would say I would take Matt McLean over Ha-Seong Kim, who went two picks ahead of him. I think I think McLean in the fourth round sounds about right. And I think Abrams in the, I mean, we were just saying third or fourth round sounds about right. So if I had to pick one, I'd go Abrams. I think it's pretty close.
Next up, he says, can you rank for the rest of the season Mikel Garcia, Tim Anderson, Julian, and Ezekiel Duran? Middle infield options, I'm guessing. I'd go Mikel Garcia, Julian, Duran, Anderson almost. I don't have any faith in Tim Anderson at all.
Yeah, Anderson's he's dead to us.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Okay. Next up, we have... Britton Allen, I love to get y'all's thoughts on the value of the fifth round pitchers taken. Any of those could be SP1s, even in 15 teams leagues, in my opinion.
So fifth round pitchers, Max Scherzer. I'm going in order. Your Max Scherzer, Logan Gilbert, Blake Snell, Pablo Lopez, Aaron Nola, fifth round Aaron Nola.
A fun one.
Grayson Rodriguez. Very interesting one there. Max Fried, Framber Valdez, and Logan Webb. My Logan Webb.
Your Logan Webb. I could see, obviously I'm a Scherzer fan. I don't believe the health when it comes to Scherzer. Gilbert is one I know, like Mike Kirtland is thinking he could be like the next Gossman if he could figure out control. Can see it to an extent. Snell, Pablo Lopez has been a beast. Nola, Grayson, I'm a huge free guy. Yeah, it's an interesting round. The Framber one's one we didn't really talk about. He fell mightily, I think, because of his most recent
performances. I was pissed. So I was, and I said this in the Zoom, Hollisker took him right before me. That was Snipe City. I was going to take Framber Valdez. Decided to go. I was actually going to double tap Framber Valdez and Logan Webb at the 5-6, and Valdez went right in front of that. It's a pretty deep group. So like we were saying with this kind of, maybe it's a lighter, like top tier starting pitching. It's a bigger kind of blob below that where you can make a case for a lot of these guys. Of that group that we mentioned, I really like Fried, Valdez, Webb, and Pablo Lopez. But it's tough.
It's very wide open.
Yeah, that's for Julio sure. Urias was the next one in the sixth round. So like it extends.
Yeah, so it's an interesting way to go about that one for sure. And then Britton also asked, would you consider going hitter, closer, and then Max Fried in the fifth? Julio Urias in the sixth could be Larry David voice. Pretty nice. Pretty nice. It could be. It really could be. That's why I wasn't too aggressive on pitching once the elite guys go. Like, I think it's a lot of similarities as it goes on.
Yeah, I think I did this 2 years ago, but it was where like the middle round starting pitching to me felt so deep that I just pounded that. I think I'd probably do that again. Like if I'm going to try some teams out, probably will start hitter heavy, grab a closer, and then volume for starting pitching. Like we've seen it time and time again, every week this season, the replacement options in Fab are just not there. And you need to stream from your bench, I think, in pitching. So just grab those middle round starting pitchers. I think that could be a viable option. Start heavy hitting, get your closer, and then pound starters.
Yep, I think you're right. And then they weren't questions, but Ryan has entered the world of the Latin American sports fans, and he's got people sharing his the two analysts deportivos, the sports analysis. He was telling his friend about our draft, and his friend responded, "Is this for fantasy baseball?" Basically, so that's what you got out of that. Ryan is just going global on us here, so just be prepared for that. He's kind of a big
deal. The show has gone global.
Gone global. But we'll wrap it up there. It was an absolute blast drafting. We always do it like we're like dog days. We're getting tired. It's like, are we really drafting? This is stupid. We get in the draft. You start doing it. You get the blood flowing. And you're just like, okay. And like we always joke, like we don't want to start planning for 2024 already. But it's nice to kind of start thinking ahead a little bit as we're still focused on this season. Obviously, we're still grinding to get there and win or at least compete in our leagues. But it's nice to also see kind of where things are going in 2024, because before you know it, we're gonna, at least I will be, because that was one thing that helped me a lot. Is I was always doing one draft at a time to keep like seeing the moving and shaking going on. Yep. And that'll start pretty early. And it was fun. So final thoughts on this one?
I don't think so. I think we covered the board pretty well. And like I said, it was just a blast hanging out with 14 other sick people.
Yeah. And what I will say is, in case anybody misinterpreted it, I'm not critiquing anybody. It seems like they're all really good in their own ways. It was a fun draft. And unlike last year where there was a clear Adelis Garcia miss, there isn't a clear guy this year. There's a lot. Yeah, like, there's still a lot of really talented players out there that can, based on team builds, could really keep things going. So I'm looking forward to seeing where these teams go from here, because it's some fun builds. And we set the – well, I think Rob mentioned on our – when we were in the stream that we're one of, like, what, the top seventh overall in, like, all of the leagues, even though we drafted early or something, all the DCs.
I believe the combined – I forget exactly what – like, the combined overall points by league. And we our draft is seventh overall out of
all DCs.
I don't know, hundreds.
I think it's, like, 353 DCs. Yeah, like, that's pretty impressive for us drafting too early like idiots. And then the other thing was, is a lot of the ADP we started with, because we basically set the first ADP, a lot of it stayed the entire draft season outside of Braxton Garrett, of course. But there were some, like, he mentioned a few names, like, that never changed, the same ADP from start to finish. So it's kind of funny thinking we're really stupid for doing this, but at the same time, we're not far off from what's going to take place in a few months, which is pretty funny.
Very sharp room.
So we'll leave it at that. Make sure y'all check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. Appreciate y'all listening. We'll be back with you guys next week as we head into September almost. It will be September next week, I think, or maybe not 31st. I'll have to check my knuckles. But we'll be back next week. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 71. Catch y'all next time.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.